Hello and welcome to the Manchester Is Red podcast. My name is Stephen Railston. I'm recording this episode on a Friday afternoon ahead of Manchester United's game against Tottenham Hotspur on Sunday afternoon at Old Trafford. In this episode, we'll look at Jadon Sancho's transfer to Borussia Dortmund and discuss who could be in Erik ten Hag's best starting 11, and we'll have a bit of Spurs chat as well. I know we already did that earlier in the week, but we'll go into that in a bit more detail. And I'm joined, of course, by Samuel Luckhurst. And Samuel, we're recording remotely, but if we weren't, I was going to make some Keir Starmer-related joke, because, of course, he was in the MEN offices yesterday. But, unfortunately, you've not got that humour today.
I've not got that what, sorry?
You've not got that joke. You've not got that humour to contend with.
Right, I see. Was there a joke there at all? I didn't
hear. That's what I said. I was going to knock off something. If we were in the office, I was going to make some sort of comparison.
I think this is going to have to get kiboshed, this intro to the podcast.
Nah, we'll leave it in. How are you anyways?
Yeah, everything's well. Thank you very much. All good.
Press conference all right?
It was a longer than usual press conference, possibly because Ten Hag was so late getting to it. He was almost 20 minutes late by the time he took his seat, as he was in a meeting beforehand. So that was the advantage of it. The embargo was pushed back so that it wasn't too frantic at all. And he spoke quite expansively on some reasonably interesting issues. Anthony, and I suppose more immediately, pressingly, it's that six players could be back from injury for the Tottenham game on Sunday, which is a particularly big boost. I know it's always a cliche when you use a team news or a fitness boost, but if you've got Luke Shaw back in your squad, Eriksen, Martinez, Casemiro, etc., that's not a bad thing whatsoever.
Yeah, we'll get into that a bit more in the second part, I think, the team news, because obviously fantastic news, seeing a few more players come back to fitness. But we'll just start off with Jadon Sancho then, Samuel. Ten Hag was asked about that in his press conference. He's officially joined Borussia Dortmund until the end of the season. €3.5 million until June, of course. And there's no option to buy in the deal as well. It was an interesting day seeing the photos come out of Sancho kissing the badge and whatnot and calling Borussia Dortmund home. What was your thoughts on that?
Well, I wasn't really surprised by it, because this is someone who thrives in an environment where there's zero pressure. And it was interesting. I looked up the date of it earlier, 2 years ago, when we were still doing press conferences on Zoom, and it was the Ralf Rangnick interim tenure. We got stuck into Sancho and why it wasn't happening for him at United, because his form had been underwhelming, to put it politely, in the first 4 or 5 months at the club. And I remember Rangnick, when he was talking about it, he was very erudite in his analysis. He pointed to his temple as if to say that he hadn't made that mental adjustment or adaptation from the Bundesliga to the Premier League. And that was essentially the gist of what he was saying. But I remember writing at the time as well. And I think the next day they played against Aston Villa, and Sancho was, he came on and he was really, really poor, really, really bad. And I remember writing at the time that he'd come from Borussia Dortmund, where they're also runs in the Bundesliga. They never get beyond the last 16 of the Champions League. Finishing in the top four in Germany is not really that difficult, with all due respect to the Bundesliga. And I know Dortmund are fifth at the moment in the Bundesliga table. And maybe as good as it's going to get is winning the German Cup. And okay, you're playing for a big club in front of 80,000 fans every fortnight. But then you go to Manchester United and you're in a pressure cooker environment. And it's the most intense pressure of any sporting institution on the planet. And it was too hot for him. And that's why, one of the reasons why he's been a failure at United and will go down as a failure, because I don't see any reconciliation come from this. Even if there's a change in manager, I think he's made it abundantly clear that if he had it his way, he would probably go back to Dortmund permanently. I think that's quite galling for him. As I said, the average age of those who live in Dortmund and that area of Germany is quite old. It's not a place where young people go to settle. I mean, someone might say, well, Marco Reus has been there for 11 years or coming up to 12 years, but Marco Reus was a boyhood Dortmund fan and he is German. It's a brilliant club, and it's also a club that's become a halfway house to bigger and better things for footballers who have the right mentality. And you've seen that with Erling Haaland and Jude Bellingham. Of course, United were in for those players, and the one player they have signed from Dortmund has not got the right mentality to be a world-class player or one of the best players in the world. I don't think Sancho's a bad lad necessarily. I think what he did in September was bad. When you publicly accuse the Manchester United manager of lying, that they did the right thing. He had to be banished. He had to be exiled. And he was out through the first team door faster than his head could spin, really. And he was obviously having to go over to the academy building. But it's in United's best interest, in Dortmund's interest, in Sancho's interest, that he does well for Dortmund, because then he'll be easier to sell in the summer. I just think the whole... If you're a Man United player and you publicly accuse the manager of lying, you've got to go permanently. And of course, there were reasons why they couldn't get rid of him in September, because the transfer window had closed and it was only open for Saudi Pro League clubs. And although United were open to getting rid of him, then I don't think it was ever in the offing. It's not taken them too long to arrange something this month. And I remember writing back in September that Sancho and his representatives had identified Dortmund as a prime place to as an escape route, and he's taken that route, and you can't blame him. But I think his career as a high level footballer may well be over. I think there's a long way back for him in terms of gaining the recognition that we all thought he might have got at some point, having moved to Manchester United and played in a Euros final with England. I wouldn't be surprised if he never plays for England again. And in terms of a historically great, huge club ever being in for him, I just can't see that ever happening.
I think the difference between the Premier League and the Bundesliga, as we've seen with exports from the Bundesliga in recent years, is obviously massive. The pace of the division, the time you get on the ball, and when you watch Sancho, I think that hugely suits his qualities playing for Dortmund and having that a bit more time. He's just not that fast, is he? He doesn't seem that athletic, actually. He doesn't really have a burst of pace. He likes to link up around the box and kind of play that intricate football, and that's not really happened at United at times. And also, I guess, which is his best position? He came to play on the right wing. Obviously, he was on the left. He played as a number 10, so that obviously exacerbated the problem as well. He seemed a bit lost at times, and I think there was an identity crisis in that regard. So I mentioned the kissing of the badge, Samuel. I thought it was quite interesting, and obviously calling Dortmund home again, kind of, and stuff like that. His mentality, that's always been a bit of an issue, a bit of a sticking point. Later training regularly at Dortmund, they kind of ignored it because he was performing well, happened again at Carrington. Obviously fell out at Ten Hag. Does he have the mentality to play for a big club? I don't think so. And that's kind of been his undoing, hasn't it?
It has. And another own goal he scored along with that post about Ten Hag and the reasons for being left out against Arsenal was his PR. The woman he's chosen to handle his PR has got... There's no point naming her, but I think everyone knows who she is. She's got an axe to grind with Ten Hag. And also, it's a poor choice when she's overseen Ronaldo's PR. Now, ever since Ten Hag saw off Ronaldo, anyone else at United has been small fry, whether it's Marcus Rashford being dropped for the New Year's Eve game against Wolves last season, whether it's been releasing David De Gea, which I didn't think was a particularly ruthless decision. I think he just naturally come to the end of his time at United, and it was the right decision to let him go. And Sancho didn't have a leg to stand on, because let's face it, if we're talking about brilliant performances by Jadon Sancho in a United shirt, it's very, you have to really, really rack your brains to think of them.
There was a spell with Ralph Rangnick in charge where he kind of had a little burst. It was a few games, wasn't it, when he was slightly promising, but he's never sustained it, which is the problem.
Yeah, and going back to that Villa game I mentioned earlier, when we asked Rangnick about Sancho in the pre-match Zoom call, he didn't start that game. He was dreadful when he came on. The next week, I think they played Brentford in the midweek and West Ham at home at the weekend. He missed both those games due to a family bereavement. And then there was that really strange end of January where there was an international break because there were games going on in South America, not games going on in Europe. So it was a barren period. But Sancho was able to take stock, take time out, go away for a few weeks. And when he came back into the team, I think the first game back was against Middlesbrough in the FA Cup. He was excellent, and he did go on a really good run of form. He must have got their Player of the Month award for February, because he was playing pretty well. He scored a good goal against City the next month as well. So that spell of form was pretty good. And this whole this attempt by some people around Sancho to rewrite history with Ten Hag is laughable, because when you only have to go back to last season to when Sancho came back into the United team after having 3 months out due to physical and mental issues. He came on against Forest. He stood there with Ten Hag, stood next to him, both of them smiling, grinning broadly. And in that February, Sancho had a good month, scored the equaliser against Leeds. Everyone was delighted for him. Came on with United 1-0 up against Leicester at home. They were fortunate to be 1-0 up at half-time. They were quite poor at home in that home game. Sancho came on, they won 3-0. He scored, he was brilliant. He started against Barcelona, I think, in it might have been both legs, but certainly in the Camp Nou, I think he started that game. And of course, he ended the month with a winner's medal. So this whole this myth that Ten Hag has mismanaged him, I just don't buy, because his first month back, everyone was saying what great man management from Ten Hag and how he's it's a masterclass in how to handle a young player. And I was speaking to people at the club in November, December time when Sancho was away and not in the training camp at Cadiz. And they said that Ten Hag said to him, look, what do you want from me? What do you need from me? What can I do to help you? And he recommended him coaches in the Netherlands. And obviously he trained in the Netherlands for a while before he came back into the first team squad in late January, early February. Nobody was complaining about Ten Hag's handling of Sancho. Sancho wasn't complaining about it. Sancho's Twitter profile picture, I don't know if it still is, but as recently as yesterday, was a picture of him and Ten Hag from that night against Forest when he came back into the team and he got a really warm ovation. When we go back to the reason why he was out of the Arsenal squad in September, and Ten Hag put it down to training form. He's got form for that. I did that story during the Euros that he wasn't getting picked or not getting as many minutes for England because of his training form. When he was at Manchester City, he stopped turning up for training. He said on the record in an interview before that he's got to improve his timekeeping. And there are some myopic people around him who are trying to rewrite history and frame the narrative as sympathetic towards Jadon Sancho. Nobody's having it. Nobody. If a Manchester United player accuses the Manchester United manager of lying, he's got to have a lot of credit in the bank to get away with it. Sancho had no credit in the bank. And that's why he's in the position he is in, and why he's back at Dortmund.
When you cast your mind back to that game against Nottingham Forest when he returned at the start of February, it's such a shame to see what's happened in the subsequent months. I mean, you just mentioned there the ovation that he got all around Old Trafford. The fans were fully behind him, really supportive. At the end of the game, he stayed behind and he clapped each corner and he went off the pitch last. And you could probably spot his smile from the Stretford end as he came on that day. And then to see over 6 months later, I have that dispute with Ten Hag, because his handling, it's rare that you see a player have a 3 month absence and signed off like that. Obviously, Sancho probably wasn't in the best place physically and mentally, but I thought the situation was very well handled. And he's almost thrown it back in the club's face, I think, Samuel, which is disappointing. Final word then on his time at United?
Yeah, I think maybe the only thing that you could have some sympathy with him over was at the start of the season. Obviously, in pre-season, he played mainly as a false nine because Rasmus Højlund didn't sign until late July, and then he was not available to play for a month. Anthony Martial, of course, was injured, so not available to play. So they're having to get by in pre-season with Marcus Rashford or Jadon Sancho, neither of whom are strikers. Rashford started the first two games of the season up front. Wasn't any good there in either of them, so he moved to the wing in the next game. And then as soon as Martial is deemed match fit, he goes, without having had a kick really in pre-season. I think he might have come on the second game of the season against Tottenham, but it's Martial who's chosen by Ten Hag to go into the team. Now, if you're Sancho and you've done okay in pre-season, then you're bound to feel affronted by that. And like, if I was in his position and I'm seeing Anthony Martial start ahead of me when he's been in the treatment room for the best part of 3 months, I'd probably feel affronted by it as well. But you've also got to understand why.
Even fast forward to September, Samuel, I completely agree with that. But then when Anthony's starting, he'll be annoyed at that as well.
Yeah, Anthony, he would be. Yeah.
Selected each week and his performances are poor. Right, okay. Finally, Anthony, It was out of the picture. It was domestic issues. It was a chance for Sancho just to swallow his pride, apologise, and nail down that spot.
And
that
he didn't
was such an
it.
Opportunity. Yeah. He didn't take it, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, Ten Hag last month, he was asked about Sancho and he gave these stock, it was his stock phrase on Sancho, like he knows what to do. And some rather naively attributed that as, oh, he's got a way back into the squad, which was absolutely nonsense. And as speaking to someone at the club, that we agreed that, you know, if Sancho did actually apologise now, it would make no difference because it would have to be the most contrite apology recorded on film since Tiger Woods, probably that time when his indiscretions came to light, and it was very stage managed and almost like a daytime soap opera in the States when he made that statement and his mother came over and there was, you know, Nike were rallying around him. So it would have had to have been, you know, almost a form of acting for him to get back into the fold. And I always go back to that podcast you and Ty did shortly after it happened, when Ten Hag, Ty quoted this quote from Ten Hag that I forgive, but I do not forget. And I think that still applies here with Sancho.
What also made me laugh was the way Dortmund actually announced the deal with a Michael Jordan comparison. For anyone who knows anything about Michael Jordan will know he was relentless in training, such a hard worker, and pushing his teammates on. And I'm not sure how you could apply that description to Sancho. Just to end this part, Samuel, did you actually get told about the clause that Dortmund inserted into his contract secretly?
No, I'm. This is,
well, there was a clause that stipulated he needed to bring an alarm clock with him to Germany. They made sure to put that in. I see you could have got that.
That's not too bad. That's pretty good for you, I think. Yeah.
We didn't laugh that much. That'll be it for part one. We've got a moment for part two.
No one covers Manchester United quite like the Manchester Evening News. And through our MUFC Pro app, you can support our journalism and become part of our United community, getting the best experience ad-free, pop-up-free, and distraction-free as well, giving you the best news and interviews, great features, and much more. Now is the perfect time to subscribe, as we've just launched a special New Year offer, which includes MEN Premium for just £12 for 12 months. Download the app and get started today.
Welcome back to part two of the Manchester is Red podcast. Now, as Samuel mentioned in the intro, finally going to have some players returning from the sidelines. There's been a ton of injuries this season, an unprecedented injury crisis, really. And Ten Hag suggested at his press conference that Luke Shaw, Lisandro Martinez, Casemiro, Christian Eriksen, Antony and Ahmad were actually all in contention to make the matchday squad on Sunday against Tottenham. Now, Samuel, as we said in the first part, very, very good news. I know it can be a cliche saying it's a boost, but yeah, those players coming back certainly is. Let's talk about Martinez and Casemiro more specifically, because they've been longer-term absentees. Martinez has obviously had a metatarsal problem, which has been tricky, and Casemiro with a hamstring problem. But those two players on the best days are huge for this team, and it can only be good if they can return at those levels.
It is, of course, and I still would say that, and Ten Hag stressed, he added a bit of caution that it takes some players time to get up, you know, build up match fitness, and I would still be surprised if Martinez and or Casemiro start this weekend. That doesn't feel like, in terms of reading the room, that's not the gist I got from that. I think with Luke Shaw and Christian Eriksen, they should go into the starting side, and I don't see any issues with that. I mean, sure, okay, he's missed the last few games and he's probably been out longer than people think. I don't think he's played since the West Ham game on, that would have been 23rd of December. So
yeah,
it's what, three weeks, isn't it? So it's a reasonable while to miss a player of his quality. But I suppose where the games have been spread out a little bit, that has played into United's hands, and it's limited in terms of, it's limited the number of games he's actually missed. Eriksen only missed the one game against Wigan, and that was due to illness. But Martinez has been a big loss. His form last season, his impact last season, he's easily the best signing that United have made during Ten Hag's time. I thought Casemiro was...
It's what he offers for the build-up play, isn't it? Like, his passing's so crucial to the way Ten Hag wants to play.
Yeah, and I always go, like when you you saying that there, I always think of Leeds away last season when Marquez was rested and on the bench in that game, and Maguire came in, and Maguire was, his stock was really low. It was on the floor. He didn't look comfortable. And he started at centre-back with Luke Shaw. And I think it was maybe in the 70-minute mark, Martinez came on. I don't know who he'd have replaced who was at left-back that day. It might have been Malacia, but it was Shaw at left-back. It was Martinez at centre-back. He made a huge, huge difference in terms of the passing angles, the way he can break the lines, and also the winning goal, the first goal in that 2-0 win. It came from a Luke Shaw cross for Marcus Rashford to head in. So it was a particularly positive and impactful substitution. And I think I'll probably summarise Martinez last season by saying he was almost as much of an asset in attack as he is in defence, because his passing is so good. And it was quite fascinating when he signed for United that Ajax released the scouting reports of him dating back, I think, to 2019, it might have been even, and his passing was, you know, they was highlighted, and it was clear that their scouts certainly are more fastidious in terms of scrutinising a player than some of the Manchester United scouts in recent years. And he's been a successful signing, but where he's not played, he's barely played this season. I think if you were going off that traffic light system, it would be premature to put him in the green band. But he's a cult figure. They've undeniably missed him. Him and Luke Shaw have been big misses for United this season. I think if they'd been fit for the majority, then United might not be in minus goal difference for in the Premier League table. They'd probably be a bit higher up as well.
And the Casemiro of last season has been a huge miss, but the Casemiro that we saw in the first few months of this campaign probably hasn't been Samuel. I mean, he was really disappointing. He looked off the pace. He's usually one step ahead of play, but he seemed one step behind in each game. I actually think of the Bayern Munich game at the Allianz Arena. I think he had a shocking game. Ironically, he scored two goals. Which was a bizarre twist. So he didn't really get that much criticism for his performance because of that. Goals kind of decide the narrative, don't they, naturally? But he could return to those levels again. He could be the player that looks destined to go to Saudi Arabia. That's the kind of way I feel about it.
That's probably the right... There's probably not a middle ground there even. I think it probably will go one of two ways. This will either be the beginning of the end for him at United. It might have started already, in fact, or he's going to show his worth and return to that level of last season. I thought he was United's best player last season. I think without him, there's no way they finish in the top four. I thought he was that influential. He scored big goals. He had big games. His performance level was excellent. I always, going back to his first start in the Premier League against Everton, I was really impressed, not just by the way he conducted himself, but he got robbed of the ball for Everton's goal in that game when they went 1-0 up. And then he did exactly the same thing to Iwobi. I think it was Iwobi who robbed him of the ball. He robbed the ball off Iwobi, and he played a brilliant pass to Ronaldo for the winning goal. And I think probably more United players went to Casemiro than Ronaldo after they went 2-1 up there. He's held in, obviously, extremely high esteem by his teammates. And he's been out for a fair old while. I think it was November the 1st, that Newcastle game when they got when they were humbled 3-0 at Old Trafford. He's not played since then. So that's 2.5 months. That's a long time out for someone who, as we saw with the odd pre-season picture, when he doesn't play football for a while, he tends to come back looking slightly portly. I think it would be fair to say. And
he had a few too many barbecues in Brazil.
He's acknowledged that, you know, he does like his food, but it didn't matter last season. As I said, he more often than not, he played very well, and he came up with some big moments for United. I mean, he scored the first goal in the League Cup final. He scored the goal against Chelsea in May on the night that they qualified for the Champions League, and there was a lot in between those goals and before the League Cup final that he contributed to. So I think the way it's gone with him this season was how a lot of us probably feared it would go when United first paid or committed to paying £70 million for a 30-year-old on goodness knows how much as far as his wages go. But he I don't think it was a surprise the way he played last season, but the influence and the aura about him was probably greater than it ever was at Madrid, by virtue that Real Madrid almost always had Cristiano Ronaldo playing with Casemiro, and they had other great players like Modric or Benzema or Toni Kroos, Sergio Ramos and Rafael Varane as well, of course. And he's a bigger fish at United, but United need him to get back to that level, because I want to see how he gets on with Kobbie Mainoo. I think that's the midfield partnership everyone wants to see Ten Hag settle on now, and where they go from there, because it only lasted 74 seconds against Real Madrid in pre-season with that unfortunate injury that Mainoo suffered when he was the collateral damage in Casemiro's challenge on Rodrigo.
Well, we said that earlier in the week after the Wigan game. That's going to be fascinating to see Casemiro, Mainoo and Fernandes in the midfield. Regarding Ten Hag's strongest lineup then, Samuel, I mean, that probably screams out to it. The main midfield, that's the most logical free in attack. Rashford, Højlund and Garnacho at the moment. And then it'd be fantastic, obviously, to have Martinez back in the defensive line as well alongside Luke Shaw. But Ten Hag, he's not had a chance to pick these players or to pick his strongest team so far this season. So when that opportunity does come around, there's going to be no more excuses and the team really have to kick on.
That's right. And he touched upon it again today about it's not been very often that he's been able to pick his strongest side. I don't think he's ever been able to pick his strongest side, in fact, because obviously at the start of last season they didn't have all the signings in. Last season Martial was the main number nine, but he was injured for well over half of it. I think he played 28 out of the 62 games last season, so he wasn't he was nowhere near as available as United needed him to be. Ronaldo was never really viewed as a first teamer while Ten Hag was manager. And as far as this season goes, of course, when Højlund was available for the Arsenal game, by that time Luke Shaw he'd had his hamstring tear and Mason Mount had got injured as well. So there was no chance of United playing their strongest side there at that time either. I think Ten Hag goes back to it's the City game this time last year. In fact, it might be, we're probably approaching maybe 1 or 2 days off from the anniversary of it, because I think that might have been 14th of January. So it must have been this weekend last year. And I think he said that was the only time he could play strongest team, but I'm pretty sure Diogo Dalot would have been injured for that last season, because I think he got injured a few days before against Charlton in the League Cup. So even this game that Ten Hag thought he had a fully fit squad to choose from, he didn't. So I actually don't think across, 62 games last season, 29 games this season, so that's 91 games into his United tenure, I don't think he's ever had a fully fit squad. And it's amazing, I think it's 9 years ago, but there was this at the time in the days of Vine, if anyone can remember that, there was this immortal clip of Louis van Gaal, who is his own first few months at United were beset by injury after injury after injury. And he was asked for team news and he said, "Only one player injured. Can you believe it? Can you believe it?" And he was smiling. It was so, I hope my impression has come across the airwaves as good as it does in person there, but I can't be the one to judge that.
I think your Van Gaal one's your best impression, to be fair to you.
I think it's probably my hidden talent impressions. I don't think you've seen the full breadth of my impressions, but and needless to say, you probably won't do. But maybe if I'm in the right mood from time to time, we're talking about the right manager. Yeah,
if I challenge you to do the Ten Hag's pause that he does in press conferences, because it's actually really difficult to reproduce.
It's his job as well to get ready.
His pause.
I'm not going to try it myself and embarrass myself on the airwaves, but we had a laugh about it because he does it all the time. It's just like a Dutch mannerism that he does before he speaks occasionally. We'll get into Anthony a bit then, Samuel, to end this part. Ten Hag was asked about his poor performances and kind of what he needs to do to improve. He kind of said that his off-field issues have got something to do with it. He obviously was out of the team for an extended period earlier this season. There was allegations made against him from former partners. Anthony denied those allegations, and he's obviously returned to the side since. So he gave quite a lengthy answer, didn't he, when he was asked about Anthony? Can you expand on that?
He did, and it's also important to stress that the police investigations in England and Brazil are ongoing as well. I mean, one of the Ten Hag used a quote that we couldn't use in copy because when we were made aware that this investigation was ongoing in the UK, it's just not legally safe. But he was very adamant that the reason why Anthony hasn't scored a goal or provided an assist this season was down to the domestic issues and those allegations that, as you said, he denies. And Ten Hag, his memory was spot on. He said he started the first four games of the season, then he's out of the team. And whilst having to deal with all that, he's not been able to get back to the levels of his time at Ajax. I think Ten Hag said he had a pretty good first season. I'd say Anthony was decent. I don't think he had a bad season by any stretch. I think he was decent. It was like it was a 6 out of 10 season. And certainly when he got injured against Chelsea in the penultimate Premier League game, that was a blow because he was definitely going to start the FA Cup final. And that did have an impact on United's preparation for that game because it meant that I think Fernandes had to play on the right when Ten Hag would probably have ideally had him playing behind the striker that day. Fred came into the midfield with Casemiro, so United did have to move the pieces about after Anthony got injured, and he was in reasonable form. I think he'd had a couple of decent games, or he was in he was doing okay. And of course, it was that Forest game which was his best performance, where he got compared to Arjen Robben. He did all right again in pre-season. I think it was a steady pre-season, not a great deal to write home about, but you weren't lamenting his performance level. I think he was fine, but I don't think he played well in the first four games of the season. He did start those games, and there was probably he was probably getting a bit of stick off supporters at the time as well over his lack of efficacy and the lack of end product, and that's been the case for throughout the season since that leave of absence ended. And United said that he came back into the squad because he hadn't been charged, detained, or arrested, and nothing has changed on that front, which is why he's been able to play as regularly as he has done for United. In late November, early December, he had two good games against Galatasaray and Chelsea. And as you said before, like we have hammered Anthony time and again on this podcast and in pieces, but I was stressed to my editor. I said, look, I need to do a piece on Anthony after that Chelsea game about how well he's done, because it's only fair that when a player performs at a level that deserves praise, that they get praise. And I thought that he was one of the standout players against Chelsea. And Ten Hag said after that game that bit of time that he'd had out of the team, referring to when he was actually dropped, had benefited him and made him hungry. And he thought, okay, is this going to be a corner turned? Is this going to be the turning point? And unfortunately for Anthony, it wasn't.
I don't think that sounds quite similar to what happened with Sancho. We've been waiting for a moment from the kick on. He'd have glimpses and moments, and you think, right, come on, produce consistent performances, and it just never happened. And when I watch Anthony, I just think it's never going to happen for him, unfortunately.
No, and I agree with you. I think he's right off at United. I think if there is ever a managerial change at any point this calendar year, that manager would look at Anthony and probably tell the people at Ineos that I don't want him. He doesn't fit my approach. He's probably the most. I know Ten Hag has taken a lot of players to United who he worked with at Ajax or who he was familiar with, but Anthony in particular, his entire time in Europe has been spent under the management of Erik Ten Hag, and he's the reason. Ten Hag is the reason why United invested 100 million euros in Anthony. I mean, they overspent by a ridiculous amount. And I think if he was at Wigan and available for that game, I don't think he'd have started. I think he'd have been on the bench. And even the circumstances around his substitution at Forest seemed a bit bizarre because he came off early in the second half and he had to come off because he was dreadful. I'd have taken him off at half time. And then I think it was during the broadcast of it, they said that he had a hamstring problem, but then he was in training days later. I think a few fans might have wondered, did he cry off there? But I certainly don't think he's up to it at United. No, and I really didn't think that United should have signed him either. Not because I'd seen him play at all or anything like that. And look, if I've not seen him play, I had to reserve judgment, and I did. I never wrote a piece saying United should never have signed him, but Roy Keane told that anecdote that time, didn't he, where he was considering signing Robbie Savage and he called him up and he got this voicemail going, "Hey, it's Robbie, what's up?" like off the old Budweiser advert. And he said, "No, I'm not signing that." And I think when I kind of just saw clips of Anthony, I thought, no, I wouldn't be signing that. And of course, not only did United sign that, they invested 100 million euros in that.
I mean, United fans must be scratching their heads watching Mohamed Kudus play for West Ham, who played under Ten Hag at Ajax, who was also very quite bright and had a clearly a good future ahead of him when you watched him at Ajax. And he's went to London and kicked on and looked much better than Anthony already. He scored obviously against United, didn't he, at the London Stadium recently?
Yeah.
Did he? I'm
thinking, yeah, he did. Yeah, he took his goal very well. And of course, look, performing at West Ham is easier than performing for Man United. Nobody's disputing that. But I would imagine that had Kudus gone to United, he'd have done a hell of a lot more than Anthony has done, 18 months into his career.
It's the fact that he's so one-dimensional, isn't it? I know, yes. We kind of made comparisons half-jokingly to Ian Robin and how fantastic he was cutting in the left, but he can't seem to beat a fullback, take it down the outside and cross. He just wants to cut in every time, and it didn't take long for defenders to suss it out. He is fine. When he executes it, it's brilliant and it works, but
when did that last happen?
And yeah, that's the most frustrating. Exactly, yeah, it's the most frustrating aspect. We'll leave it there for part two. We'll be back in a moment for part three.
We're launching a brand new bite-sized midweek audio-only podcast, bringing you the latest happenings from Old Trafford in a much more informal format, covering topical news, online gossip, transfers, and personal tales as a roundup of everything you might have missed surrounding Manchester United. Join host Tyrone Marshall and myself, Rich Fay, as we go inside the club, separating the fact from the fiction and giving you an edge on your mates down the pub.
Welcome back to part three of the Manchester Is Red podcast. Now, as we've said earlier in the show, United are in action on Sunday afternoon against Tottenham Hotspur. Now, Samuel, we mentioned it in the earlier podcast this week that United are 8 points behind Spurs already, which is quite frightening, actually, after 20 games played. So already this game feels like an important game for top four.
It certainly is, and it's a must-win game. But as I said before, United have to view every game as a must win. That's the mentality that's required at the club. But in particular, because this is the only game in the Premier League this month, this is the month defining game. United's month isn't going to be defined by Wigan in the third round or Eastleigh or Newport County in the fourth round, unless they somehow lose to a League Two or a non-league side. I think it's safe to say that they're as good as in the fifth round already. But they need a fillip going into February. They've got, as I said, on Monday, they've got West Ham at home. They've got Villa away, I think at the start of the month. And sorry, they've got Wolves away on the 1st of February. And then it's, in terms of the weekend games, I think it's West Ham at home and then Villa away. Those two teams are above them in the table. It is a really crucial month where they've got to be getting between 12 to 15 points from those five games. They really can't afford to come in any lower than that. They're going to have to change. They're going to have to change, really, just to put it bluntly, because they've not been consistent with their form whatsoever in the Premier League this season. They've won three of their last eight in the Premier League, I think it is. And of course, in November, they had the player and the manager of the month winners, albeit they only had three games in that month, but they still won all those games. And If they can go on a run now of six wins going into March, then of course that's going to fuel belief that they can get into the top four. It's going to be a tall order, but they have got players coming back for this game this weekend. Those players, you would imagine, will be in fine fettle to start against Wolves at the start of next month. It's a very difficult month as well. Wolves they were unlucky to lose to Liverpool at home. They beat Tottenham at home. I feel like they've had a couple of other impressive results this season under Gary O'Neill, because he's done a pretty good job, given that he was parachuted in there just before the season started. So I'm doing him a bit of a disservice. Okay, they've got Luton away. Luton don't really get thrashed. They're quite an obdurate side. They've had some very heart-fought games at home this season, drawn with Liverpool, losing narrowly to City, losing to Arsenal in added time. So they're going to be a tough nut to crack, I think. They've won against Newcastle at home as well. So that's pretty good going, just going off those games. I think Tottenham only won 1-0 there as well. That's going to be tough. Fulham at the end of the month, that's probably the... It's possibly the easiest of the games, but I digress slightly. In terms of this weekend's game, they've got a lot stacked in their favour. They're at home. Stuart Ratcliffe is going to be there, as I wrote around, I think it was on Boxing Day. It feels like things are changing, even though Ineos are still waiting for regulatory approval. But the real change has got to be on the pitch. If you've got more players involved in the squad that are familiar to you. I mean, the bench the other night was so callow, and it consisted of names who may never, ever be on a Man United bench ever again. But if you've got more regular names, that's going to be a boost. And also, look at the depleted nature of Tottenham's squad. No Pape Sarr, no Yves Bissouma, because they're on AFCON duty. No Son Heung-min, because he's at the Asia Cup. They've got injury issues to contend with. Looks like the new central defensive signing could go straight into the team even, just because of the centre-backs they've had to play there in recent weeks, where they've been playing two full-backs at centre-back, I think, in Emerson Royale and Ben Davies. So Tottenham are gettable. As much as they've improved under Ange Postecoglou, you just look at that squad and they're gettable. They play a high line.
Do you not think they're almost the perfect opposition for United because of the high line? United tend to struggle against teams who play a low block. They can't really break them down. We see that game over and over again at Old Trafford a lot of the time. But Tottenham are going to come to Old Trafford. They're going to push up high with that high line. There's bound to be space in behind. Rashford, Garnacho use the pace, counter-attack, because Tottenham are probably going to have more of the ball. And I quite fancy United to get something this weekend, the more I think about it.
I do as well. I think it'll be a very competitive game. I'm not necessarily saying that United are going to win by more than one goal, because they struggle to do that anyway. But you would definitely have United down as favourites for this game because of the home advantage and because of the more depleted nature of Tottenham's squad than United's squad. And look, with Bissouma and Sarr being out, that alone, you've got to go with Maynou and Eriksen. You can't go with McTominay and Maynou. I think there would have been a case for McTominay to come in just because he's a robust physical presence in midfield to come up against Sarr and Bissouma, who played very well against United back in the in August when Spurs won 2-0. United that day in the first 30-35 minutes were very good. They should have had a penalty. Fernandes missed an absolute sitter. And even when they went 1-0 down, Anthony had a very good chance and he should have scored, but he hit the post. The second half was a really poor performance, but the first half was actually pretty good from United. And okay, Tottenham were starting to find their feet under Ange Postecoglou. And I think he's done an excellent job there so far. He's made them a much more competitive team. It's a much more harmonious place. Spurs fans are a bit different than United's in that where things are going well again, they've stopped chanting Levy out. You saw last season when it was going well with United, you were still hearing, we want Glazers out on a weekly basis. It's not the case at Tottenham. But what I would say about Spurs is that I can't think of a team in my lifetime who have won so little but get so much praise. And I thought
I was about to say that because Postecoglou's became a media darling all of a sudden.
Yeah, I was about to use that phrase.
Australian charm. Yeah, he is likeable, to be fair to him. His press conferences must be pretty good for undercover. Is it naivety or is it to be admired that he sticks by his style of play so much? And my mind gets taken back to the game against Chelsea when Tottenham had two men sent off, and it was suicidal that Tottenham playing such a high line in that game.
It was, and I thought I was hearing things on the commentary because it was almost as if, oh, look how laudable this is, that they're high line, they're sticking to their principles. There was nothing laudable about it. They got wiped 4-1, they conceded three goals to Nicholas Jackson, who, I mean, as he showed that night, he did struggle to score a tap in. They had to pretty much put it on the plate for him to score. And every time he got in front of goal, you doubted if he was going to score. It was one of the worst hat tricks you could ever see. But he did still score a hat trick against Tottenham, and that was that was on Spurs for this preposterous high line. Because even when they went down to nine men, given how dysfunctional Chelsea are and how profligate they can be in front of goal, I think if Tottenham had played their cards right and managed that game better, they could easily have got a point from it. I think they had a goal disallowed, didn't they, after Chelsea made it 2-1. It was Aaron Dyer at the far post, wasn't it, from a free kick. So even after they did go 2-1 down, they were probably a few millimetres away from having an equaliser. I think if they...
That being said, Samuel.
Yeah.
That being said, it is very impressive, obviously, how his style of play... I mean, he's only been there 7 months or so, or 8 months. It's so recognisable. You can clearly tell what he's trying to do and he is sticking by it. So if we flip that around then and we look at Ten Hag, and there have been accusations, of course, a lack of style of play. What does he actually want to do? 18 months on. Of course, he's had a ton of injuries this season to contend with. But when you look at what Postecoglou's done in such a short space of time, there have been people looking around and turning around at Ten Hag and saying, well, why can't United be doing something similar in after the 18 months?
Yeah, it was a completely legitimate question as well. As you say, that Tottenham team, it's already got Postecoglou's fingerprints all over it. And I imagine there would have been some Spurs fans who were underwhelmed by their choice in appointing him and taking a manager from Celtic. But speaking to some contacts, I heard, I was hearing very good, very effusive things about Postecoglou last season while he was at Celtic. And he's put his imprint on that team very, very quickly. I think Spurs' recruitment has been really good. Vicario has been a very impressive piece of business. He's been one of the best keepers in the league this season. Is it Udogi, the left back? I know he was signed before Postecoglou came in, but he's been one of the best left backs this season. As I've said, up until he got injured, James Maddison was the best player in the Premier League this season. They've clearly missed him, and he's a player who I thought really United should have been bringing in. I think he would have been one of those signings who had the personality and the character to handle the pressure of playing for Man United, certainly more than Jadon Sancho, and also more than, I suppose, more relevantly, given the time that he joined United, Mason Mount. But talking more, talking about the current situation, I do think that the team that United put out on Sunday will probably be stronger than Tottenham's team, just by virtue of the depleted nature of their squad. They've brought Timo Werner in as well, and had United done that, the perception of that deal would have been a hell of a lot more negative than Tottenham doing it. And fair enough, like Tottenham's recruitment, as I said, it has been quite good so far under Postecoglou. But going back to the whole media darlings thing, it doesn't take a lot for Tottenham to be, the apple in the eye of some personnel in the media. It was the case when Harry Redknapp was the manager there. It was the case when Mauricio Pochettino was there as well, when they had obviously some high moments, but they didn't win anything under Pochettino. They didn't win anything under Redknapp. All they've won in the last 30 years have been two League Cups under two of their more unpopular managers, George Graham, an Arsenal man, and of course, Juan de Ramos, who didn't even last a year there.
Lads, it's Spurs.
Yes.
But before we go, Samuel, can we have a Postecoglou impression then? Now we've just talked about...
I'm Australian and I've got a real good bit of charm
That's not terrible.
I'm not going to do an impression of you because that would... You insist you don't sound anything like Michael from I'm Alan Partridge, but I think everybody would be of the opposing opinion on that one.
Well, if you agree or disagree with Samuel, and I'd love to hear the thoughts on his Postecoglou impression because I didn't think it was very good.
We're going to get one star ratings now, aren't we? I think after that, unfortunately,
with your accent impressions. But leave a review, 5 stars or 1 star, depending on how good you thought Samuel's impressions were. Because to be fair, when Ms. Van Gaal one was exceptional. But thank you very much for your time, Samuel.
Thank you, Stephen. Thank you very much.
And thanks to listeners as usual. Check out our social channels, TikTok. We're now on. I don't actually have a shout out. We've given mention the Vine earlier in the podcast, which was almost the first.
We're definitely not on
TikTok,
that. Yeah,
it?
We're definitely not on that.
No, not anymore. We're on TikTok as well. Have a great weekend, and we'll be back on Monday. Thank you.